Now, good morning to you again, by the way. Thanks so much for sticking with us. John on Facebook says, here's my take on this. We were speaking, by the way, just before 10 o'clock about the cut in welfare rates for about 27,000 Ukrainian refugees in serviced state accommodation. John says, if the Ukrainians were treated the same as the Irish, I don't think there'd be any problem. Why is there different rules for the non-Irish? I think everyone should be treated equally. Another says, we owe these people nothing. The entitlement is unreal. It's Irish taxpayers' money these people are taking. They get everything for free. Are these people sending their money back to Ukraine? If so, that's illegal. A caller says, why, you ask the question, why cut the benefits now? Simple, the government does not have a bottomless pot and they are run out of ideas to put more tax on us, the Irish. This plastic bottle return tax is downright robbery and prices are increasing every week. It's quite interesting in that I wonder what this does to the argument that you would hear from people that you bring people into this country with a view to skewing the election results. You do hear that from time to time, and it's not just a trope in Ireland. You do hear it in other countries as well. Well, this would seem counterintuitive if that were the actual plan, to sort of really look after people and get their votes, because just ahead of a local and European election, you might get a backlash from those same people as well. So I wonder what that says to that argument now. A caller says, my son moved down the country 6 months ago as he couldn't find work here. There was no work in the hotels. He's taking home €470 a week. He has to pay €205 a week in rent. He has €50 diesel to pay. On top of that, he has car tax and insurance to pay. He applied for his medical card and they only allow rent and travel as expenses. He's left with €250 a week. They turned down the medical card. This is what we have to live on, and it's not easy. It's really not fair that we've lived here our whole lives and paid taxes and we can't survive. There's nothing here for young people. No wonder they're all emigrating. So he's moved out of the county to work. He's on €470 a week. Take out €205 of that. So that leaves €265. Then he has to pay €50 of diesel as well. That leaves him €215 per week. Now, that doesn't account for a tyre needing changing in the car, as the listener says, tax and insurance. I mean, he's working and seemingly working really hard to kind of somewhat stand still. And his parent doesn't think that that's fair. Greg, my son drinks a lot of Red Bull. I know we fight about it all the time, but he's paying the recycling charge, but for some reason Red Bull cans are not accepted into the machines. I've raised this on every shop I try to do. I try to do this and they say there is a fault in the system which is currently being looked at. My thing is, until it's fixed, why am I paying the charge? Interesting, didn't hear about this before. There seems to be a particular problem with the Red Bull cans. They are quite narrow. I wonder, is that the issue? Have you had that problem too, or have you seen a workaround? As the listener quite rightly points out, and I've done this myself, by the way, so it's really sort of a real kind of comment, if that makes sense. They're all real, but we do fight with our young ones when we see them drinking too much Red Bull. But that being said, it is what it is. The tax is stuck onto the can, but this caller says, for some reason, these return machines will not accept Red Bull cans. Is this something you've experienced? There's highly qualified Irish people who can't get jobs. Welcome to Ireland, says a listener. Tell that woman, get onto her Ukrainian politicians and let them finance their lifestyles. Another, can I get medical card? €5 over the limit. I can't get a medical card. €5 over the limit. I can't get medical card, right. I'm Irish. It means I'm means tested. Give them to the Ukrainians with the big fancy cars. There are some big fancy cars, but not many. But I take your point. Of course, I always do. From the east of Ukraine to where the war is as far as Letterkenny is from London. There's no war in the west. They can go home for Christmas and for medical appointments. They can't find a job if they're so qualified. Total BS. Should have got no money to start with. We won't see the money we're wasting on these people, believes the listener. And if you are of a different view, by the way, as well, I do understand and I appreciate all the contacts we get, and I would never discourage anyone. But often, sometimes it's those most motivated or most of a particular opinion, whichever it might be, by the way, there's no slight in that, to comment. So if you feel differently and you feel frustrated, listen to those comments as well. Just for balance, send your texts in, if they are out there, to 086 60 25,000. Right. tomorrow. We are out and about. It's pretty much business as usual. We'll have the usual mix of stuff. You'll be able to listen and watch the show. But we are broadcasting live from On Greenan Hotel in Burt. It's for the 12th Annual Conference of Changemakers Donegal. It'll be an insightful morning of connection and discussion about local and global issues. Join us from 9. We have our Friday panel as always, and then we'll give you a sense of what's happening up there too over the following couple of hours. So it'll be entertainment, education for us all, and a bit of fun there as well. All right, so we were talking a little earlier on to a member of a driving instructors union, and there's this thing that happens every other year whereby they are out with someone instructing them, and someone gets in behind them and they're actually testing the instructor, so to speak. Noreen, this happened to you, did it? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Hey, what was your experience?
Well, over 20 years ago, I went to do my driving test and the instructor got in beside me, and the next thing I heard the back door opening. And another man got in there, and I was like, what's happening here? And my instructor says to me, oh, this is my tester. He's testing how I'm going to do testing you. Do you mind? And I was like, well, I'm here for my test. I don't want to not do it now, you know. So whether I minded or not, I felt I had to go on with it, Justin.
So you were actually doing your test. It wasn't a lesson. How nerve-wracking was it with someone in the back seat?
So nerve-wracking. It was one thing, I was nervous enough going for the test, but when I knew that my instructor was getting tested as well, I thought, no, you know, there's nothing, there's going to be no leeway here at all, like, you know.
Yeah, I never thought about that,
of course. The nerves were up now.
Well, there's a big question that I've yet to ask. Did you pass?
Yes, I passed. I just thought to myself, right, you need to settle yourself, just treat it as a drive with a few friends, off you go. And I was lucky enough I did pass now, but I'll tell you, the nerves were definitely up.
I wonder, did the tester pass? Did you ever find out?
I never heard that. Okay. I never heard that. Now, how he got on.
Right, never, it'd be heard. Funny if you
but
passed
God,
and he
you know,
failed.
I know. But you know, if there was a different way of doing it, gosh, like I think I was about 20, you know, and you're young and you're nervous. And for that to happen, you know, it was just, I was thinking, if there is a better way.
Mm. Where did you do the test, Noreen?
Donegal Town.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. That was
is
handy.
That what you said, where?
That was handy. That was handy at that stage. I think the most complicated thing was the hill start at the Ulster Bank. I don't know if you had to do it there.
Yes.
And the reverse at the Old Lahey Road.
Yes, that's exactly where. Yeah,
you get them
but
two.
Now the
you get two of them done, and you're doing all right.
Yeah, exactly.
All right,
and now
good stuff.
You know, I'm older now, and I'm thinking about going for a towing license. But I'll tell you, if I was to do it, and somebody else got into the back now, my nerves wouldn't be.
What are you looking to
as
tow?
Able to cope with.
What do you want to tow?
Just trailers or maybe caravan or something like that.
Okay.
So I have to get my theory test done now and then do another driving test then. So I'm hoping I'll have one instructor that day.
What? Why not? Yeah. Two? You seem to do well with two.
Maybe it would help me.
All right. Okay.
But
Noreen,
no, definitely. If there was a better way, I would like to think there would be a better way these days. You know.
All right. Indeed. Of course. Well, listen. Good luck with the towing test.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you. Take care of yourself. Lovely
all
to
right.
chat to you.
Bye.
Thank you so very much indeed. Have you any particular stories of a driving test or a test experience that was a little bit out of the ordinary? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Can you match Noreen? She passed with two in the car. Right, okay. We are going to talk now about our next issue. One second here now. I'll get to that in a moment. Hi, Greg. About the fish shack. It's an amazing wee business. The reason why DCC wants to put a bus stop there is because it's a handy place to lift and lay off passengers. Indeed, that's the question I put. Right. Sorry, I have the right details in front of me now. Sarah Keogh is a dietitian with the Celiac Society. Good morning to you, Sarah. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. And we're also joined by Orla Maguire from Dunloe, who has celiac disease. Orla, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Can we talk, Orla, first to you about, I suppose, when you realised there was an issue and then how you came to be diagnosed?
Yeah, no problem. So I have suffered kind of for years with different with stomach kind of issues, and I always thought it was like maybe IBS. That's what I always put it down to because of the severity of the pain that I would have got. So I just kind of got on with it, and you know, I never actually queried celiac disease. To be honest, I didn't think I had it or anything like that. And then just fast forward to just last year, I spoke to a doctor about it, about the pains that I was getting. They were so severe, I thought I was, you know, going to need an ambulance. They were really, really intense pains. And they did a blood test, and it came back on the blood test then that I actually had the markers for celiac disease. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I had to have like an endoscopy, and they took biopsies then from the lining of my stomach, and that's how they got kind of to the bottom of the diagnosis then.
So when you sort of get pointed in the right direction, the diagnosis is relatively straightforward. I know that's easy for me to say, but if you get the right person to say, right, okay, this could be celiac disease,
yep,
we'll do the blood tests and further investigations.
Yep.
Before you got yep. the diagnosis, and we'll talk about, you know, treatments and diets and all that type of stuff,
yep.
what was it like for you, generally speaking? I know you talked of a very serious episode, but when you had flare-ups, did you have yep. flare-ups? So sometimes you were grand, then something triggered a flare-up.
Yep.
How severely did it affect you yep. generally, Orla?
Yeah, so like I could eat, you know, the same thing over and over and have no issues, and then I could eat it just once and it would give me, it was like a pain, like I thought I had to be bleeding. Do you know that mm-hmm. kind of way? It was this has to be, you know, it was awful. I would have to, like, I was lying on the floor to try and cool down on the tiles, you know, and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really severe. So I never, in, you know, my wildest thought it was, you know, gluten that was causing the problems for me, you know, at all. So, you know, to get that diagnosis then, I was like, oh, this is, you know, it was crazy. Like, cause I never thought it was going to be, you know, a celiac yeah. disease, you know?
And of course it's great to get the diagnosis of cause, because you can put a
Absolutely.
Name on it and you can
yeah.
take action. I'm going to come back to you and talk about
yeah.
how it can be sort of complicated
yeah.
though, to keep it at bay. The main symptoms of celiac
yes.
disease are digestive problems. It could be diarrhea, constipation, pain and cramping, fertility issues such as repeated miscarriage and difficulty getting pregnant, losing balance, fatigue, nausea and vomiting, bloating and gas, weight loss. Sarah Keogh, obviously that's a, you know, an extensive list. I presume for some people, some of that's present. For others, it's not, or maybe that's not the case, Sarah.
So you're absolutely right. What we would have thought of traditionally as celiac disease would be people having a huge amount of diarrhoea and a lot of weight loss. But over the last 20 years, we're realising actually people can have celiac disease with what look like much milder symptoms. But the internal damage the celiac disease causes is the same for everybody, whether you're very severe symptoms or you're getting what we might call milder symptoms. So, you know, about 60% of people will get what Orla has described there, pain in the tummy. They might get diarrhoea, constipation, bloating and gas. But I think, and Orla, I love that you shared your story, because 20% of people who think they have irritable bowel actually have celiac disease. So that's like 1 in 5. Mm-hmm. So if you think you have irritable bowel and you've never been tested for celiac disease, will you please go into your GP and get checked? Because, you know, people end up with decades on it. And what people don't realise is that if your celiac disease is untreated, you get much higher rates of osteoporosis, and you're also more likely to get certain types of bowel cancer. So it's actually really, really important to find out if you are celiac. And it's fantastic that you shared that, Orla, because I think lots of people go through life, they get a bit of bloating, they get the odd bit of diarrhoea, and they never think that that's something they need to go to the doctor with, but you absolutely do. But as I said, 60% of people will get those gut symptoms, but 40% of people will maybe get very mild gut symptoms, or they don't get any at all. So you might see people getting repeated low iron. You mentioned things like struggling with fertility. People might lose their balance. You know, I've had kids who stop walking because of the damage to the nervous system, you know, headaches, tiredness, which obviously can be lots of things. Excuse me. So that's why you do need to go to your GP mm-hmm. with it. And it's why the Celiac Society runs Celiac Awareness Month every year, and that's why we're really trying to raise awareness of celiac disease and help more people to get checked and tested.
And Sarah, do you think it's important that if you go to your GP and maybe you're being treated for IBS or something else, that you do say, look, at, I know you're the professional, but I really would like you to run celiac disease tests?
It's definitely worth saying, in fairness, the vast majority of GPs, if you do go in with symptoms like that, they will automatically test you for celiac.
Okay.
So what it might be thing is just check, have they done it?
Mm-hmm.
And now celiac disease can kind of keep turning up. So if you were tested sort of more than 5 or 6 years ago and you're still having symptoms, no harm to repeat the blood test. But the crucial thing is you have to keep eating gluten, which sounds so odd, but if you actually cut out gluten and then go for your test is going to come back negative, if you're celiac.
Yeah.
So really important to keep eating the gluten with that. But yeah, no harm to talk to your GP, and especially if it's in your family. Because we know that about 1 in 50, roughly, people in Ireland will have celiac disease, but that jumps to 1 in 10, if not more, if you have a child or a brother or sister or a parent with celiac disease. So you're much, much higher risk if it's in your family already.
And if it goes untreated, you talked of the complications that can follow. Over what period of time does that happen, and what other damage can it do to the system? Obviously, you know, the discomfort and the impact it has on your life, and then we sort of move to the potential for an increased likelihood of some bowel cancers. But I presume there's a range of impacts it can have on the digestive system in between those.
Across the board with it, I mean, the big one we see is children just don't grow. They get this stunted growth, and you see very short, like if you have a conference on celiac disease, you have lots of celiacs there, it's a lot of very short people. So people like 4'11", 5', 5'1", and that's because they weren't picked up as kids and they didn't get their proper growth. So we will see kids, sorry about this, so we will see kids not growing properly. You know, I often say to parents, like, when was the last time you had to buy them shoes? And if they kind of go, God, it's more than a year. And you're like, anyone with kids knows you're buying 2 or 3 pairs of shoes a year. If the kids are not growing, that's always my big marker for it.
So if someone listening with a child, and this, by the way, these are indicators, not need for fear, but perhaps good advice to go and check. So if you've got a child, and you believe they're just not shooting up as they should, and they do sort of complain at times of stomach cramps or discomfort in that area, that would be a strong indication that you think they should possibly get tested for celiac disease.
Definitely for that. But I mean, if you have a child and you think their growth has just slowed down, no matter what, always into the doctor for that. And I really would look at celiac as one of the tests, but you do want to check that. Kids should be growing out of their trousers, growing out of their clothes, you know, growing out of their shoes. If they're not, there's something you need to find out why, what's going on that with kids, you know.
So,
and I said, just with the Celiac Society, so we've the whole Celiac Awareness Month, there's loads of events on our website at celiac.ie, and we're so delighted that Promise Gluten Free have been supporting us with this, because it's such a big topic to raise awareness for. Now I said, lots of other things can cause that, but that's why you start with your GP, or you can get in touch with us at the Celiac Society at info@celiac.ie. You can email us in if you have any questions or you're not sure when you hear all of this and you think, wow, does everybody in my family have celiac disease, you know?
Yeah, okay, so you've been a dietitian for 6 years with the Celiac Society.
Mm-hmm.
If someone gets the diagnosis, what are the no-go foods?
So what you're avoiding is wheat, rye, barley, and what we call ordinary oats. So oats themselves don't have any gluten, but they get absolutely covered in gluten during harvesting and packaging. So someone with celiac disease needs to look for and use gluten-free oats. So wheat, barley, they turn up in loads of foods. So your bread, pasta, all your cakes, biscuits, those foods straight away. And then anything with malt in it. So lots of breakfast cereals will have malt and barley in it. So they're all foods that we're going to avoid. And they're, to be honest, they're kind of the easy ones. Where it's tricky is where you've got tiny, tiny bits of gluten coming into food all over the place. So that's where you'll get little bits of gluten in stock cubes, excuse me, mayonnaise, ketchup. You'll get it in chocolate. You will get it in all kinds of things. So the Celiac Society produces a food list every year, which is a list of foods that are definitely gluten-free. There's a couple of thousand foods in there. But it's just one stuff goes into packaging. The risk is that it's going to touch gluten somewhere.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So if you had a bowl of pasta, right, clearly you would expect that there's quite a lot of gluten in that. It's going to have an impact. But there's even just cross-contamination, glancing blows, effectively, I don't know how else you'd describe it, that can also then be, that can trigger the symptoms in the person.
Absolutely, and it's just as dangerous. So the example I'd often use is if you had a bowl of gluten-free ice cream, for example, and someone stuck an ordinary wafer in it, even if they take the wafer out, there's now more than enough gluten in that ice cream that a celiac can't use.
So we'd be very familiar then with someone, say, for instance, with a nut allergy and the anaphylactic shock that they might get, and we're very conscious of cross-contamination and all that kind of stuff, and you'll see in schools, like whole classes, don't take in peanut butter or something like that there. Really, I'm not saying we should go down that route with gluten, but really it's in the same space, but I don't think the general population see it as such, you know, with the cross-contamination and the importance of making sure there is none.
And you're absolutely right in the sense, absolutely, because it just can't touch. Now, we definitely don't need to start banning wheat from schools or anything like that, but it's the big danger in schools is young kids swapping lunches, actually, is the big one. But it's things like if you're celiac, you have to have a separate toaster that nobody else uses. You have to have your own butter so that no crumbs get into it. You know, it's really tiny, tiny bits. And that's the bit that a lot of people don't get, because lots of people do still think celiac or gluten-free is a bit of a fad or a bit of a lifestyle choice. Mm. Like the amount of our members who say they go into restaurants now and go, I'm celiac. And they go, oh, we don't do that, but we can give you a vegan menu. And they're kind of like, oh, God, I'm not vegan, I'm celiac, you know.
Right.
So there is this idea it's a fad, but no, and it does. And I think you're right. That tiny, what we call that cross contact, is a huge issue. It's what makes life very difficult.
I just wonder, and the reason, of course, no, I'd never be advocating for any bans in schools or what have you. I'm just kind of wondering if even those that prepare food are fully aware of what we've been talking about. Not, of course, many are, but not all. Right. So, Orla, this makes your life very difficult then, obviously. What is the lived reality of I suppose, eating at home or eating out, avoiding cross-contamination?
Yeah, it's, eating out, you know, places are kind of, they're a lot better, I would imagine, than what they were years ago. But you still have, you know, the risk like that, the cross-contamination and things like that. You know, even with chips, you know, some places have separate fryers, some don't. But they will generally tell you if there is a risk of cross-contamination. But I've had a few issues eating out where the food was supposed to be completely gluten-free and, you know, no cross-contamination. And I've had a reaction. So I know myself I've eaten something that's caused me to have a flare-up, you know. And then at home, like, it's okay. I'm the only, well, for now, I'm the only celiac in my house. So, you know, I haven't gotten around to getting a new toaster yet. And, you know, but I try kind of keep myself as safe as I can, you know, with wiping up after, you know, maybe making the kids' food and my partner's food and stuff like that. But, like, it is, you know, you just have to be careful. You know, and I, you know, it's a big change. So it is after, you know, 37 years of eating gluten, you know, to just in the past 6 months not being able to.
And do you feel, I mean, obviously with the effort that goes into making the changes that you have, has your body reacted positively to that though?
Yeah, like, I mean, flare-up-wise, like, once I've been eating, you know, gluten-free, unless I have been kind of, unknowns to me, I haven't had any flare-ups that I haven't given myself. You know, I still, like, you know, it's only new to me. So, like, there, you know, I there was a couple of times where I was like, oh, I'll just try this. It might not do any damage this time. And, you know, lo and behold, an hour later, I'm in agony, you know. So I just need to, you know, get my head around things, like, and, you know, reading labels and stuff like that.
And then, of course, if you're invited to a wedding or a birthday party or going out for something to eat, you don't want to make a fuss, do you? We don't want to make a fuss as humans, you know, so.
That's it, yeah. It is, you know, it can be embarrassing sometimes, you know, as well. You know, because you just feel like, you know, like you were saying about the fads, you know, and oh, is this just a fad? And I'm kind of thinking, oh, they probably are thinking this is just a, you know, another young one coming in, you know, on a fad diet. But, like, it's not, like, it is. It's tough, you know, because you do tend to, like, I would always kind of look at the menu now before we would go somewhere or go to, you know, a restaurant that we know caters, you know, well for gluten-free and celiac, you know, disease. Okay. So you just have to be more careful. Eating, you know, fast food, you know, or if you needed a sandwich in a shop is really, that's hard. You know, you can't just go in now and go to a deli and get stuff, you know. So that's lacking, you know. I suppose it's not the healthiest option, but if you're...
But it's lovely,
you know,
sometimes,
and
you would miss it, I know.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'd love a big baguette. So I went with a chicken fillet roll, like, but I can't.
Okay. Listen, Orla, thank you so much for helping us raise awareness, and I
no
hope
problem.
Things continue in a positive way. Take care, Orla Maguire. From Dunlow, who's kind enough to help us get the word out there. And finally, Sarah, you know, obviously much of Awareness Month is about, you know, reaching those people that are yet to be diagnosed or what have you, or maybe a parent listening going, right, okay, she's talking to me, I get that. But it is actually also educating the wider public that there are many, many people that this is their life, and... the more we can, because it's also more expensive, of course, to feed yourself. But it's important that we generally, more of us know, Sarah.
Well, that's it. I mean, and the gluten-free foods are definitely more expensive for a lot of people. So it is a financial burden. And we're working at the Celiac Society to try and get some financial relief for that. There used to be a dietary allowance for people on the gluten-free diet, but the government removed that a few years ago. And we're really trying to get that back, especially for families who are on lower incomes that are really, really struggling. But I think as well as that, restaurants, you know, we're talking about eating out. And obviously with the new school lunch program, and they're rolling out meals for kids. And there's just been quite a few issues with children, you know, just do you know what it is? And it's not badness on anybody's part, but it's that lack of understanding, especially around that cross contact. Plus, people have this idea that you can be slightly celiac and not slightly celiac. And the problem there is that some people will have a very strong reaction to gluten and other people don't, but the damage on the inside is identical. So whether you're someone who gets pain straight away or someone who doesn't, the damage to the gut is the same. So, you know, it's really important that we look at kind of the school lunches rollout, that we look at in restaurants, anything that we can do just to make life that bit easier for someone who has to have this medically determined diet. Mm-hmm. It's not a lifestyle choice. And yeah, I think that's something that's really important to get across to
people. That's been driven home today. Sarah, thanks so much indeed for your time. That's Sarah Keogh, dietitian with the Celiac Society. And again, thanks to Orla Maguire from the WESH for helping us to spread awareness there. Hi, Greg. The comment about the A4 road problems was in reference to the European election leaflet from Niall Blaney. Oh, OK, I didn't know that. Sorry. Inferring that if his organisation cannot detect a misprint, then surely they're not competent enough to represent our interests in Europe. Also, is the A5 really a top European priority? I get you. Sorry, I didn't pick that up. We get so many messages, and hopefully I get the tone of the messages right most of the time, but I didn't on that occasion. My sorry. I want to play a couple of requests, actually, as we head into the break. Did anyone hear a series of loud bangs yesterday near Rathmullen Beach around 6 o'clock? It actually sounded like a number of explosions, but I don't know what it was. OK, well, let's get our collective minds together. Were you in and about Rathmullen Beach at 6 o'clock last night? Did you hear a series of loud bangs? This caller believes they sounded like explosions, but they don't know what it was. And of course, they're curious to find out. So let us know if you know. 086 60 25,000. Someone out there surely able to answer that question for us. Hi, Greg. Can you wish Granny Mae Henderson, Balliar Remelton, a very happy 90th birthday? Lots of love from all her grandchildren. Happy birthday, Granny Mae, and lots of love too from us all here at Highland Radio. Happy 90th birthday to Mae Henderson. This is coming in this time for you, Mae, from Pat and Huey. You're very popular today. A very happy birthday to Helen Kilday in Glenwood Park. Lots of love, Helen, from Mum and from Dad. And a big happy 91st birthday to Angela Friel, who is in Buncrana. Angela, have a fantastic day. And that come in from a number of people there. 086 60 25,000. Right, the weather forecast is going to be sunny until it's not. There's going to be a little bit of rain later on, we're told. Okay. A whole host of guests in studio with us now. We'll start first with Douglas Carnes, Artistic and Executive Director with the Danu Young Women's Choir. Good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Morning, Greg. Doing well this morning.
Talk to me about your involvement with the choir.
Yeah, so I founded the choir 2 years ago. I direct all three of the choirs currently, you know, where you can start with us at 4, go all the way through 18. And so I conduct all three choirs right now. And then I am also on the board of directors as the executive director as well.
Originally from New York, by the sounds of things.
Yep, just a little bit.
What do you think of this portal?
Down in Dublin. Yes. I am terrified of that portal. I will not be going to visit.
Which side worries you most, being on the Dublin side or the New York side, I wonder?
I don't think I want to be on the Dublin side and see a reflection of myself.
Yeah, I think we really need to shut it down.
Yeah, I think it will. You know what? I think your wishes will come true pretty soon.
Camille, your background, particularly whilst you were an American before you moved here, you've worked with and conducted numerous choirs, haven't you? Really, yeah. on a huge scale.
Yeah. So, as you said, numerous choirs. The last one right before coming out here was a young women's choir, which kind of inspired me to start this here with Danu. But I was heavily involved in the barbershop community, conducted a world-class organization out in Minnesota, played on Broadway for quite a long time, got both degrees in music and getting a higher ed degree in music.
I mean, obviously you've heard some of the crew here performing the barbershop over in America as well, too.
Yep.
I mean, with the background that you have in that, it's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Wildly so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not an easy thing to coordinate. It's not just simply, you know, there's an incredible skill to it, type of singing.
Yeah, barbershop is actually relatively accessible, but to do it at the level that these girls are doing it is actually very challenging, right? Barbershop is easy to sing, but hard to make sound good is kind of how I would put it.
All right, okay. And you also worked on Broadway too with The Lion King?
I did, yep, for a few years there.
Brilliant stuff. Why did you come here?
To start this choir. No, my wife got a job offer here, and I decided to get my doctorate down at the Royal Irish Academy of Music down in Dublin. And we were originally planning to go to Dublin, but just kind of fell in love with Donegal.
Yeah, brilliant. What a perfect reason to do so.
It's
right,
just amazing weather.
We have Tegan, Jennifer, Scythe, Sheena.
And Katie is with us as well
Katie
today.
And Katie as well. All right, that just didn't make the list. Which one's Katie again? Yeah, sorry, Katie. And you a regular as well.
She is a regular here. Yeah.
Right, talk to me, Katie. I'll start with you since I left you out by accident.
Okay.
Katie, talk to me about your involvement in this ensemble.
So I've been part of Donna Young Women's Choir now since the very start, so since 2 years ago. And it's actually like the best thing ever. I always be saying like I don't know where I would be without the choir, because it is like kind of, it's like a kind of family kind of a vibe. It's really great.
Yeah.
So we're really thankful to have Doug and everything. I got the opportunity to go to New York City as well, which was amazing. And that was at the Barbershop Harmony Society. And that was just something that you don't experience here in Ireland.
Mm.
So it was a really kind of unique opportunity to get. And we're all like really thankful for it.
Sheena, how long have you been a part of the choir?
Since the beginning.
Yeah, as well?
Yeah.
All right, okay. And it's like opened up an awful lot of doors and experiences for you,
absolutely.
As well as the sort of the collective. You know, I mean, you're actually getting stuff out of it.
Oh, yeah, like 100%. You've got, like, first of all, like the companionship, you know, the camaraderie. You've got friendships. And then, of course, you've got the experiences.
Mm.
And those bonds are kind of strengthened by the experiences that you go through together. Like,
yeah.
New York was just life-changing.
Yeah, so I would imagine so.
Yeah.
The memories stick long. Scythe, how long have you been involved from the beginning, too?
Almost from the beginning.
Mm. Not interested. Step back. So come forward.
We didn't let her. We didn't let her in the first time.
From the beginning, and you were over in New York as well too. You were involved a couple of times as well. It's just fantastic stuff, isn't it? What's coming up? Was the last time? The last time was there. There was something else coming up for you. Was it the last time you were in, though?
There's always something coming up.
Yeah. I just can't remember what it was at that time.
For these three in particular, they actually have something coming up separate from Danu. So if you guys want to talk about that for a second, that's...
Oh, yeah. So we're actually in a quartet called Call 3 Canola. And we're going to Leeds in a week to Mike Warm. At the Babs Barbershop Convention. So
that's
really
I think that's
excited.
What you mentioned the last time. Yeah,
probably.
I know there's something coming up. So that's it. So that's just around the corner.
Yeah, I know.
Fantastic. How long's the set? Or how big's the set? Or what? How many songs do you have to sing? How long for?
So we're not competing. So we're mic warming. So it's kind of like we're sort of like the supporting act. So we're like, we are getting judged. So we're singing two songs to be judged. And then... We were singing two other songs. We have four songs that we're performing, and then when you kind of do the afterglows, then we might like put in a few others or kind of like a session or two.
Excellent, fantastic, brilliant stuff. Right, Jen and Tegan, can you step forward, if you don't mind? You are going to be performing for us now. Jen, how long have you been involved with Danu Choir?
Since 2015.
choir?
Just since this year, since September.
Mm. And so how has it been for you?
Really, really eye-opening. I suppose it's not just about the singing, it's about the friendships, the family that we have created in Danu, and obviously the life lessons that we've learned as well, like going to New York, and we like helped with Heart of Dinner, which is like a charity, so we don't just focus on singing, we also focus on the individual and growing them.
Yous are all students, right? Can this continue after school?
This is me and Jennifer's last year.
Really? Is it, Tegan?
We finished secondary school. So.
Well, that just sounds bloody cruel.
Yes.
I noticed the look you gave me.
I'm absolutely disgusted.
No, I mean, listen, we started the organization to give young people more of an opportunity to grow with other like-minded individuals. So as of right now, there's no kind of adult sect of this choir. 10, 15 years from now, will there be like an alumna group potentially?
Of course there would, yeah.
Well,
exactly.
Potentially, Greg.
And then also, people have the opportunity to explore off the back of the lessons they've learned.
100%. You know, yeah. But there are so many adult choirs here in Letterkenny and Donegal that those opportunities already exist, you know?
Yeah, fantastic. Right, okay. Is there an event upcoming? There is. Well, we'll get to that afterwards. There is. Okay, sorry. I'm literally going to wear that mic stand out. So what we'll do is, if we don't mind, we're going to listen to Douglas Carnes. Carnes, isn't it?
Yeah. No, that's correct, yeah.
Douglas Carnes, who's the artistic and executive director with Danu Young's Women's Choir. The first time Douglas has been in with me, in any case. And now we're going to hear from Jen and Tegan. I should say that is Jennifer Chudley, for those listening. That's correct also, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And also Tegan Robb. Okay, so we're going to hear She Moves Through the Fair. Whenever you guys are ready, do you want to lift that just up a little bit to you? I was only joking. They're not that sensitive. Perfect. All right, girls, go on. Focus.
Friendly she is.
Yeah, thank you. We've done this before, girls. You know, I rely on you to clap. Do you remember? Thanks. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Fantastic, Jen and Tegan. That really is sounds really, really good. Now, we're talking ahead of Danu Young Women's Choir. On the 19th, what's the date today?
19th of May. We brought you a poster, Greg.
Right, okay. So it's the 16th today, right? So on the 19th of May, live at the Guildhall in Derry, there's an afternoon evening of history through song. Talk to us about, Douglas, talk about the concept.
Yeah, so the show is called Diaspora, and what we're looking at is the Celtic diaspora emigration throughout the world, right? So originally it would go Scotland, Ireland, Wales, and Cornwall. We are leaving the Cornish out. We are apologizing to the whole Cornish audience here in Donegal. But we're really looking at Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, and then kind of where we went from there as well. So America, Australia, Canada.
And how are you tying the music into that journey?
So all of those songs that are picked are either songs that are written by Irish composers, Scottish composers, Welsh composers. We're also singing in those languages as well. When they go kind of to America, they're either songs about, you know, going to Australia, which is a lovely song by an Irish composer called Orphan Girl, or songs written by American composers with Irish heritage and things like that.
Fantastic stuff. Well, how do people get tickets?
So they can go to our website, which is danuyoungwomenschoir.com.
That's D-A-N-U, by the way, just if it helps for the search for those not aware.
Yep, that's the easiest way. Or they can go to eventcreate.com/e/danuyoungwomenschoir. And Greg,
I'm going to make an executive decision here.
Yeah.
We will link those addresses on our Highland Hub Facebook page. So
that's great.
It's just so you know the page, so you can just click straight through.
That's perfect. And just for today, because, Greg, you've been so gracious to have us on, for 24 hours, if they type in the code Highland, they'll get 10% off of all their tickets.
Super stuff. Brilliant. Okay. And loads to look forward to. As you say, you know, you've another batch of great young talent to discover. That's happening with open auditions in the summer. We'll talk more about that maybe closer to the time. And you have a retreat to look forward to in the Giant Causeway this summer, and then the Leeds trip and all that kind of stuff. So really exciting stuff. Great opportunities and great life experiences for all those involved by the sounds of it.
Absolutely.
Right, okay. Thank you all. Really appreciate you calling in. It's been lovely having you in again, and continued success.